welcome to today's podcast regarding ESG issues. What we're going to do today is talk a little bit about the current ESG landscape in relation to the SEC, in particular, how it affects fund managers. And then what we're also going to do is a little predicting about the current new administration and what some of their ESG-related actions may be in the upcoming months and years. So I'll just introduce each of the speakers today. I'll be speaking regarding private funds. I'm Debbie Franzis, a partner in the New York office in the investment management space. We also have John Ryan, a partner in our ERISA group, who also works in the New York office, who will be speaking about the Department of Labor and ESG and ERISA. And then we also have Lance King, who is counsel in our DC office, who primarily works with registered funds. So thank you, John and Lance, for joining us today on the podcast. Looking forward to a great conversation. And Lance, we'll start with you. Maybe if you could just give us a sense of just the general ESG landscape. It's been, really a year since our last webinar that we did together. So just a quick update for everyone.
Sure, I can definitely give a quick overview of the ESG landscape. Definitely should be no surprise that sustainable investing is definitely becoming more mainstream in the U.S. And we note that asset managers have definitely been embracing sustainability factors and metrics as significant drivers in decision-making and capital allocation and pricing and value assessments. We note that a recent report by Morningstar, investors had added a record $51.2 billion to sustainable mutual funds and ETFs in 2020. That's more than twice the amount invested the year earlier. And at the end of last year, $200 billion in assets were invested in funds identified as sustainable, and that represented a 72% increase from the prior year. In the US, $1 in $3 of the more than 50 trillion of assets under professional management is invested in ESG strategies, according to the Forum for Sustainable and Responsible Investment. And that represents a 42% increase since 2018. There's also been good news on the investment performance front as of late. Morningstar indicates for the entire year of 2020 that sustainable equity funds significantly outperformed relative to their traditional fund peers, with 3 out of 4 sustainable equity funds beating their Morningstar category average. It's also worth noting, in light of the pandemic, that there's been strong sustainable fund sales and performance, despite some predictions that the pandemic would actually hinder growth in the industry. We observe that the pandemic has increased attention on social and governance prongs of ESG. For example, we noted that there's been more discussion of issues such as employee relations and workplace practices, and that includes job safety, paid sick leave, workplace practices, other workplace practices. We also noticed that even issues such as governance for corporations been more discussed. There were stock buybacks and dividend payments and executive comp issues that arose in the context of the backdrop of layoffs. So I think that's a general lay of the land. Like I said, generally you can see that ESG is on the rise.
That's great, Lance. And I'll just add, I mean, I think in the private fund space, I think we've similarly seen a rise in, you know, not just ESG or sustainable focused funds, but also on a number of managers who are really thinking about ESG issues, in particular kind of ESG integration in their investment management process, thinking about, you know, how they can engage with issuers on these different topics. How they already are, how they can think about this in connection with their proxy voting policies, and also just, you know, being mindful of how, you know, these issues are really impacting, you know, their investment process and how they're thinking about companies, particularly those where they want to be, you know, focused on kind of the long-term growth of the company and really think about how these factors are potentially adding value to the companies. There's obviously kind of always that question about, you know, are these factors really going to be relevant? And that's something that, you know, private fund managers are thinking about in connection with each of their different issuers, how they're evaluating the current information. Obviously, we'll talk about if we think that's going to change, and there'll be maybe more disclosure that's actually required, which would give people, you know, a better basis for comparison among different issuers. But that's something that we've definitely seen managers continue to think about. I think particularly in light of, you know, kind of the issues that Lucian Firth from Simmons & Simmons and I spoke about last month regarding the EU's sustainability regime and those regulations going into effect next month, really in kind of a little over 2 weeks. You know, a number of managers, even if they don't have a presence in the EU or aren't within scope of the SFDR, are really thinking about the issues in that context as well. And just kind of a quick reminder on that for those of you who maybe didn't listen to that conversation that we had. If you do, you know, have some kind of nexus in Europe, it is worth evaluating whether or not you might be in scope, even if that just means that you are marketing certain of your funds into the EU. And for this purpose, we're excluding Switzerland and the UK from that. But if you are marketing into other countries, whether that's Ireland, the Netherlands, you know, Belgium, different other countries in the EU, you then would likely be in scope with respect to those funds, and then need to think about kind of the disclosure that you'll have to provide to your European investors. And this disclosure would affect you whether you have a, you know, quote unquote kind of sustainability mandate or not. And so obviously, you know, we have kind of more details in the podcast that we did, you know, last month on that, but just kind of a reminder that that's something for fund managers to be thinking about in the context of any funds that they may have marketed in the EU. Great. So now I think I'll turn it over to John. John, obviously we know that the Department of Labor has been very active in the ESG space. So maybe you could just give us a sense of both what the current state of play is in relation to the DOL and ERISA assets, and then also, you know, just where you think things might change in connection with the Biden administration.
Sure. So, you know, as most people were aware, the Department of Labor issued two exemptions in the last administration affecting ESG, the Financial Factors Regulation, and the Proxy Voting Regulation. Both of those exemptions became effective in January. And while they're effective, you know, they were significantly cut back from the proposals to the final regulations affecting, as Lance pointed out, the many of the comments and prevalence of ESG in the marketplace. The final regulations, rather than prohibiting ESG, in effect, and in fact, don't even mention ESG in the regulatory language, but talk about pecuniary factors and specifically acknowledge that if you take ESG factors into account in an investment decision, so long as they reflect the risk and return of that investment, that would be an appropriate ERISA fiduciary activity. So while the regulations are much less restrictive than the proposals, they're still not in line with the approach that the European Union is taking, being supportive and actively promoting ESG or sustainability. And given statements of the Biden administration, don't look like that's the approach the Biden administration would like to take. They, I think, would want to be more supportive and promoting ESG than merely being neutral and focusing on pecuniary relationships. So I think when you look at what Biden has said, and particularly who he's selected or nominated for the Secretary of Labor. Mr. Walsh was the mayor of Boston. Boston has been a big promoter of ESG investments. I think they have over $200 million in ESG investments while Walsh was mayor. He also comes from a background of organized labor, which historically has been a big proponent of using plan assets to invest in ESG and targeted investments. So I think looking at that, we can expect that the ERISA rules will change. The scuttle is people don't believe that any regulatory change will be made until 2022. But people might expect that as early as the first quarter of 2021 or the first half of 2021, there might be some informal guidance, either interpretive bulletins, a field assistance bulletin or FAQ issued by the department, clarifying some of the ambiguities of the regulations in a way that's much more favorable to ESG investing. And I think, just as an aside, one of the reasons that I think that that might be happening so quickly is the department just recently announced that it was not going to try and change the class exemption that the Trump administration also issued in the end of its term for the best interest contract and investment advice. And I interpreted that as the Department of Labor, saving its resources in order to address other issues. And ESG seems to be at the top of that list.
Okay, that's great. Thanks so much, John. That was a great overview. So Lance and I will now just kind of both cover, what we think some of the, kind of new changes might be in connection with the Biden administration. I'll just start out. I think it's been very obvious from, both the statements that were made during the campaign and then obviously statements that were made during the transition and in the past month as well, that, the Biden administration is very focused on ESG and in particular climate. There obviously have been a number of, multi-pronged plans that Biden has, put out both to address, the climate issues and then also, some of the more social and governance issues that people have also been focused on more recently. And I would say this focus has also been reflected at the SEC, in a number of kind of, public statements. The current acting chair of the SEC, Allison Herren Lee, has made different statements regarding the fact that climate change, does present a systemic risk to financial markets and calling for uniform, consistent, and reliable disclosure from issuers, and also has made some, some recent statements regarding the fact that, that same level of disclosure or at least policies and procedures may be required from fund managers as well. There also has been a recent new position created in the SEC to address climate and ESG issues, where they have a senior policy advisor whose sole role is to give them that advice. I do think that, we will expect to see significant and some swift action from the administration in connection with ESG matters. In particular, whether that's going to be more uniform disclosure by issuers of public companies, which obviously would benefit our investment management clients who often do have difficulty, kind of comparing issuers on these different issues because of the lack of uniformity in the information that they're providing, even if they are using, for example, a scoring system that either they've developed or one that's in use by a third party. So that would be something that I think would be very welcome for our investment manager clients, where they'd like to see this increased disclosure and in a more uniform way. I think there, at least in the private fund space, I do think that there will be some, guidance from the SEC, whether that comes from, the SEC staff in the form of FAQs or more informal guidance regarding what type of disclosure private fund managers need to have at the outset. I think there is a likelihood that there will be future regulations. These may be not necessarily in the form of, maybe the type of disclosure that managers need to have, but it may be in the situation that as a fiduciary, you should develop policies and procedures related to ESG and think about, the type of disclosure that you're going to give to your investors in that context. I would say, that's definitely something that we'll be, looking for, whether, the guidance comes in the form of more informal, or in the future, if there are different regulations, you know, I would think probably it would be maybe in an informal context first, and then regulations to follow maybe in, you know, later in 2021 or 2022. Obviously, you know, managers are continuing to have normal course regulatory exams, and there are also maybe some highlights that we will see from that regarding how the SEC is looking at the type of disclosure that managers have and also looking at their policies and procedures. So Lance, I'll just turn it over to you now if you want to address, you know, kind of any maybe specific, you know, things that you think the Biden administration will focus on in connection with registered funds.
Sure. I think a lot of what you just mentioned, Debbie, actually applies equally to registered investment companies, particularly your observations about what the SEC is doing, acting chairwoman Lee, some of the standpoints she's taken, and some of the statements have been made. We know that Commissioner Crenshaw as well has also made similar statements about the need for stronger ESG risk disclosure. It's also worth pointing out President Biden's SEC chairman nominee, Gary Gensler, has a reputation as a strong regulator. He was a chair of the CFTC, that's the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, from 2019-2014, where he led the development of a new regulatory framework for derivatives and swaps. So he has a strong background as being an advocate for regulatory reform. I also think that one possibility in terms of what the SEC may do is that it's possible that they'll sort of adopt a collaborative approach for, involving government, issuers, investors, because as we know right now, there's a lot of voluntary standards out there. So there's been a lot of work done on the ESG risk disclosure front, a lot of it by, for example, organizations such as the Sustainability Accounting Standards Board and the Task Force on Climate-Related Financial Disclosure. So those, a lot of the voluntary organizations and standards relate to standardization and uniformity so that investors will just have a more clear picture in terms of what they should be investing and how they allocate capital. So I definitely think that there's a lot of impetus for providing further regulation in this regard. One thing also worth mentioning is the SEC last March did issue a request for public comment on the names rule, or actually really the requirements relating to the use of fund names. And a lot of that did touch on ESG and sustainability as being used, those terms being used with fund names. So we haven't heard anything specific from the SEC on that front just yet, but we know that there's definitely a good number of comments that were received, and our understanding is that the SEC is in the process of still reviewing those comments, digesting those comments.
That's great. And Lance, just a reminder for everyone, the names rule, you know, just give us a little background on what that means. Does that mean that, you know, kind of if someone wants to use sustainability in their fund name, that then they'd have to meet certain criteria or kind of prove that to the SEC?
Yeah, that's right. As background, the fund names rule, basically, if you have the name sustainability or ESG, or for that matter, any name suggesting a particular type of investment, usually need to commit at least 80% of the fund's assets must be invested pursuant to that suggested investment. So a lot, excuse me. So for example, the word sustainability was in a fund name. And this is actually one of the issues of debate, whether or not there is truly something called a sustainable investment. And if that were the case, under the name rule, you'd have to invest at least 80% of your assets into sustainability funds. But a lot of people in the industry view it more as a strategy, so the name rule wouldn't be applied. And that's just one of the issues, again, that this whole request for comment seeks input on.
Okay. Yeah, that'll be interesting to see how that plays out, particularly, I guess, if we get more kind of uniform disclosure from issuers, it may be maybe easier for people to justify whether or not their strategy is actually sustainable in connection with looking at the underlying investments as well. So yeah, that was basically what we wanted to cover today regarding, you know, kind of what the current state of play is and where we think things may go in the future in connection with the new administration. And so now I'll ask kind of each of you just to give, you know, kind of like a key takeaway for investment managers, obviously knowing that things are maybe a little bit uncertain at this point, but maybe just some things that we think that they should be doing in order to prepare for the potential that there might be, you know, upcoming new regulations. So John, we'll start with you. So obviously the new regulations, you know, are not in effect yet or may not, you know, be in effect until 2022. You know, what do you recommend for ERISA managers right now?
Well, I think not only ERISA managers, but people looking to, you know, get allocated ERISA dollars, even if their funds are staying below 25%. I think what I'm seeing is the allocators really want to see an ESG policy, and they want to see a policy that isn't, you know, impact investing. They want to see a policy that says we're going to take ESG factors into account for pecuniary purposes. It lines up well with what's required in the EU, their definition of sustainable investments. So I think it's what I'm seeing is managers, you know, putting these policies in place, putting the infrastructure in place to implement these policies into their investment decision-making process. So I think if you really need to start considering that now, because it may not be required yet, but it's certainly something people are looking for and expecting when allocating assets.
That's great. Yeah, obviously we've seen a lot of our investment managers, you know, frequently seeking out assets from ERISA, you know, managers and allocators. And so, you know, it's something that that they need to be focused on in connection with, you know, the growth of their funds as well. And Lance, what about you? What would you, you know, if you were advising kind of a mutual fund now, you know, kind of what actions do you think they could start taking today?
Yeah, it's pretty hard, obviously, to pinpoint any sort of exact action. And given that there hasn't really been any specific rules issued by the SEC, even though, again, as we've discussed during this podcast, we expect that there to be something significant in future years. I would say right now, it's just really just, again, disclosure. So to the extent that you have ESG disclosure, you really should be able to explain comfortably and clearly how the ESG factors are incorporated into the investment process. And that means they should be, you know, if you're using sustainable ESG, you must really be clearly describe what that actually means. I think another point is that to extent we're seeing a lot more attention being paid to proxy voting, for example. So to extent that you vote proxies for clients, and that's most mutual funds at least, the advisors do that. You ought to make sure that it's consistent with the investment mandate. So I think that's important. And we're also seeing that a lot more corporate engagement efforts are being undertaken by funds. That means direct engagement with corporations and boards of directors. That's not required, but that's something we're increasingly seeing funds do.
Okay, great. Yeah, I think, you know, just to kind of end out on the private fund space, I think, you know, we're seeing a lot of the same things, you know, that Lance just mentioned, with people really focusing on their disclosure across all of their different documents. So whether that's, you know, their marketing materials, their ADV, you know, which is due for an amendment at the end of March, and then also the fund documents, and then just making sure that any statements are really going to be consistent with the actual day-to-day policies and procedures, both that they have in a written format, but actually more importantly in the actual, you know, kind of day-to-day functions that are happening. So whether that's, you know, kind of the investment team thinking about the investment process and how ESG integration fits in with that when they're, you know, speaking with issuers, when they're voting proxies, For their clients, because as Lance just mentioned, you know, that's something that typically managers are doing in connection with their private fund clients and many managed account clients as well. And maybe thinking about that a little bit differently than they have before, where maybe they may have historically voted more consistently just with management, and thinking about whether or not that type of a vote, at least on particular issues, whether those be governance issues or social issues or of course, environmental issues, if that's really going to be consistent with the statements that they've made and the disclosure that they've given to their investors about their ESG policy and the considerations that they're taking into effect. And so that, you know, would be, I would say, the things that we're helping, you know, a number of our investment management clients with at this point, whether it's, you know, kind of developing their policy, if they have a policy, maybe taking it to the next level and thinking about how they can make some changes in order to be more attractive to the allocators that John mentioned, whether they are, you know, ERISA or non-ERISA. Obviously, a lot of large institutional investors are very focused on ESG. And then just really making sure that you then kind of in the day-to-day investment management process that they're really thinking about these factors and that they're kind of documenting how they're taking each of these into effect. You know, and then, you know, we've also helped a number of managers also think about the issues at a firm level. So how are you, you know, kind of within your firm thinking about, you know, social and governance issues, whether that's on kind of the diversity and inclusion front, or of course, you know, environmental changes or things like that, obviously in connection with, you know, many of the work from home environments that people still have in relation to the pandemic, thinking about how you can best, you know, kind of achieve, you know, kind of the dual perspectives of, you know, being a fiduciary for your clients, but also in a way that is going to work for all of your employees, regardless of kind of the home situation that they may have, you know, whether they have small children or in giving people, you know, flexible time for work and things like that. So those are all, you know, things that we've worked with a number of managers on, whether it's, you know, kind of more the investment policy in relation to ESG or what they can do as a manager as well. And so we're, you know, obviously happy to talk about any of these topics further with any of you. We hope that you enjoyed and found this podcast to be informative. And if you do have any questions about any of the topics, feel free to reach out to myself or Lance or John. And we look forward to letting you know in the next few months whether any of our predictions came true. But thank you all for joining us, and do let us know if you have any questions.